The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Yeah, we got to get XLR microphones.
We got to get XLR microphones. We have to disable every bad microphone on our computers. We have to kill the president of Nicaragua and different even foreign power. Don't worry about it. And,
yeah. Nicaragua doesn't have a secret agent service.
No. And we have to watch the new Black Panther movie. On Disney
Obama.
Plus. No, different Black Panther. Did you see Father Paul's tweet about the Barack Obama travel plaza in Ireland?
No, I did not see that.
there's a travel plaza named after Barack Obama in Ireland.
That's fascinating.
It is a really funny thing.
I just have been seeing a lot of tweets about the inferiority of USB microphones.
Oh yeah, me too.
Which I feel like, first of all, is targeted.
Targeted. First of all, don't like it.
Targeted. Second of all,
rude.
Yeah, rude. Third of all, where are you? Oh, so you just want me to buy more stuff?
Hey, you know what USB stands for? Universal serial bus. You know what the Greek word for universal is? Catholic.
Ooh.
Universal serial bus microphones are more Catholic. Do you know what XLR stands for? Protestant LR mics.
Do you know what USB stands for? Unlimited spending budget. Actually, JK, that's not what it stands for. It stands for untimely
death. Untimely sandwich boys.
Untimely sandwich boys. Welcome to the Untimely Sandwich Boys. Today we're gonna review the local delicatessen.
Yeah.
Welcome to The Crunch, the only podcast not mired in controversy. It's your boy, Ethan.
And I'm going to start a controversy.
No!
What? Is that not what you wanted?
No.
I'm Patrick, by the way.
Hi, Patrick.
That's...
Please. Hey. Well, hold on.
What?
If you were to start a controversy, I mean, no, there's no such thing as bad PR. So
no, that's not true.
There's no such thing as bad publicity.
Mm-hmm.
So what would be the publicity that you would generate vis-a-vis your controversy
that's a good question.
Because I think there's a good line that you can ride between doing a sex crime, which
I don't want to do that.
Not good. Be great for me, great for the podcast. I start after you, you know.
That's fair.
Once we officially cut ties and make
everyone your YouTube video in response to my controversy
will blow, you know, up.
It'll blow up. 100,000 views.
Yeah,
hour, you know.
And that, so I need something short of that. Probably, hopefully, pretty far short of that. Mm-hmm. But more than just like I think the Latin Mass is better than the Novus Ordo. Yeah, no, you know what I mean? Tired. That's not a controversy.
Yeah.
It's the facts.
That's just true.
That's just the truth. I'm just kidding. Am I? Who knows?
Nah, we're just goofing. We like, we're to, have just goofing we like to have fun. We like to joke. Yeah. We goof around. That's what we do.
We like
to. I think if I was going to have a controversy.
Yeah.
I mean, it would have to be like an ideological controversy.
Sure.
It would have to, but like, we don't have an audience that would get mad at me for any of my opinions.
Yeah. An ideological controversy, such as like,
I'm writing a book about gender. So right. Like, that's
genitalia easy. Regalia.
Indeed. We've all heard of this book.
I'm going to keep saying you name it that. It's such a good
frustrated. Title.
No,
I hope no one from Pauline listens to our podcast.
While you're thinking of your controversy, can I say something that's freaking me out?
Sure.
Yesterday, I started a new job on Monday this week.
You did? I do. Yeah.
Hooray. Woohoo. Hooray.
Yay.
So
they called us during our video bonus podcast.
Yeah. How don't they know that this is my real job and that other job? No, it's good. It's a full time gig and I work 40 hours a week there. But they were asking me about my podcast.
Oh, really?
And there's a few non Catholics that work at this organization. It's called Heroic Media. And, basically, they asked me about my podcast.
And, dangerous.
And I said, "Well, it's a Catholic podcast." And they're like, "Oh, interesting. What kind of?" It's like, "Oh, it's a comedy Catholic comedy podcast." They're like, "Oh, that is really interesting." And like, I was in a team meeting, and everybody was on Zoom, and I like said the name of our program, and I saw multiple people sort of like writing down. Crunch Catholic podcast.
Oh, there
combo breaker. The next day, I'm at a parish council meeting or whatever, and someone asked me how Seek was because I missed the last meeting for Seek. I was like, "Oh, it's good. We podcasted all these things." And someone goes, "Oh, what's your podcast?" I was like, "Oh, it's called The Crunch." And they're like, "Who's your co-host?" This guy Patrick Buman on Twitter. "Oh, what's your Twitter?"
It's
Ethan _ Crunch. And then I have like all these people from my parish that follow me now, and I was like, I don't think you should follow me. And they're like,
I'm trying to maintain duplicity here. I'm trying to live a double life. Like, you don't understand.
I'm in this position where all the people, I actually don't even need you to generate a controversy because all the people from my work and my parish are just going to listen and read to everything I've done online.
Yeah.
And they're going to kick me out. I'm nervous.
It's one thing. That is one thing that I've like, sorry, I have a hair in my mouth. This is the problem with video podcasting is that you can see me pick a hair out of my mouth.
Yeah, I can't now pick both of my nostrils at the same time.
I can't like I used to. Both fingies knuckle deep up in the, cavities.
I can just no longer scratch my frontal cortex.
Going in opposite circles.
Yeah, just really clearing out those sinuses. Fixing my pineal gland.
I was listening to this
gland.
Podcast that someone said was like ours, and I said, but there is no podcast like Unto the Crunch. And
indeed.
We were told that in a vision that there would be no podcast
no
like
podcasts like you.
There would be, but
it is not good for Ethan and Pat to podcast alone. But
they
will
were doing
it anyway.
They were doing this bit, and I was like, "This is definitely a bit that Ethan would do." He was talking about blowing his nose in the shower and how you don't need tissues in the shower.
No, you don't need anything. You just go right in your hand and then you wipe it off.
No, he was talking about like throwing his back into it, just like nothing, just like he was like, "Yeah, suppose I pull something." And I was like, "This is really funny."
That is,
this is really good. I invited them on The Crunch because I think it's there are a couple of guys who could goof off. You know,
that's good. I want goof off and
we need my Russian alias Patrick Goofoffin.
Goofoffin.
You know who I saw a video of today?
We're really just jumping around here.
Sorry.
Yeah, tell me what you saw a video of.
Gary today. Kasparov.
Oh yeah, the chess man.
He sounds like Gru. A little bit, like he talks like Gru.
I've heard him speak live in person once.
Really,
at the Grand Old Opry in Nashville, Tennessee.
Oh, cool. Oh, or did you go there on like a school field trip?
If by that you mean I competed in the Super Nationals chess tournament that year, then yes, I did go on a school field trip, Patrick.
Okay, yeah.
Don't demean my accomplishment.
That was what I was implying. Yeah. I didn't mean to say
field
trip.
Did you go on a
trip.
Little field trip to the National Chess Tournament? It's like not going to the aquarium.
I understood that you wouldn't be across the country for no reason, like watching Gary Kasparov.
I went as a fourth grader to observe the chess tournament.
Oh, okay.
No, I'm just kidding. Oh, okay. I competed.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Did you do well?
I did. That was the my best year. It was actually not fourth grade. It was eighth grade when it was in Nashville. Mm-hmm. And I did that year. I won 4.5 games out of 7, which was good enough to put me at like 60th in my division in the nation, which is like K through 8 people ranked under like 1200 or something. You know what I mean? So it wasn't like, you know, best in the world by any means, but it was like, okay, I did respectable. I won more games than I lost. So that was
good.
That felt, and especially since that was my fourth national tournament. I had been to three, mm-hmm. maybe 3 or 4 before that. Every other time I had gone 2 for 7. And it sucks. It sucks being a fourth grader and losing 5 games in a row.
Oh yeah. That must hurt.
It's like over 3 days. You're just like, you just lose. And it's just, I was so.
Are these like hour games?
Yeah. Some of them would go for 2 hours.
So yeah, because like, I mean, it's an hour per person.
An hour per person. Yeah. So
that's crazy.
And then it's like at the end, I remember so vividly one year, I think it was when we were in Denver. We lost. I lost like the final game. It was like close it out 2 for 7. Like I should have won the game. They give you the little freaking participation medal. I remember getting back to like our table and I just threw it at the ground. And my mom was like, "You don't need to be mad." I'm like, "Why the heck am I here?" Like I was having an existential crisis.
Yeah,
it was brutal, but it was fun. You know,
I lost a chess game today. I had to resign to come to this podcast right here.
Yeah. No way.
I stood up from my chair and I did this.
Yes.
I shook the computer's hand.
Do you do, you do computer play?
No.
I
wouldn't have had to pause it if it was, I could have just walked away.
Are you playing, what are your time controls? Are you playing 5 minute or 10 minute or 15?
10 minute.
10 minute? What's your 10 minute ranking? Ranking check.
Rank check.
Rank check.
It's 800 something.
800?
It's not high by any means. I can tell you.
I fell under 1200 for a minute here because I've been playing a bit more. Like, I'm making mistakes by playing at night when I'm holding Peter.
And
just like, I'm up late and I'm like, surely this is a good time to make nice strategic competition victories.
Yeah, not at all.
Ranked 1152 right now. So I'm not doing too hot.
Where am I at? Okay.
Where are you? What's going on?
I had to withdraw from this one and that brought my rank down to 822.
I lost to a guy in India the other day.
Mm-hmm.
And I like did my opening. I was white and he like says the name of the opening in the chat. And he's like, "Danish Gambit." I was like, "Thanks for letting me know." Like,
thanks.
Obviously I know the name of it too.
Yeah.
Like I'm doing it.
And, at that level, I would expect you to know the name of the opening you're playing. Yeah.
Yeah. And then at like one point I like blunder a piece or something and he's like, "Oh, got your knight." And I was like, "Why are you bragging? You're beating me." And he was like, "Man, I'm trying to win." And I'm like, "That's okay. But you don't have to make me feel bad in order for you to feel good." And he was like, "Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I just lost a couple of games and I really want to win this one." I was like,
"I get it, man.
It's okay, man. I understand.
I get it."
I was having this existential conversation with this kid and he's probably 12 years old in Bangladesh. You know,
sure.
I don't know if that's a city in India. Please, nobody get mad at me.
Bangladesh is a country. You're fine.
What's the name? Is it Bangalore? Is that a city in India?
Okay, now we're going to territory I don't know about.
So you know about Bangladesh, but you don't know about Bangalore? Freaking uncultured.
Are these Pokemon evolutions of each other? I don't know.
Bangalore, officially Bengaluru, which sounds like the name of a Bengal on a child's program, is the capital and largest city of the Indian state of Karnataka. So yes.
Oh, wait, hold on.
Wait. What's up?
Yeah, Bangalore is a city in India. Yeah,
okay.
Sorry,
cool. Thanks for checking for me.
You're welcome. I got it. I just checked it in my brain. Just pulled that file out. Yeah. Right here.
Yeah,
I've had a couple of I've had to like steady myself and not when I have like a really bad game, just be like, screw it. And
just so tilted.
Resign. Because I had a couple of people do that where I was like really going and they resigned on me and I was like, come on, I wanna like checkmate. It feels good, you know?
Yeah.
For a while, I was I'll pull this up because my bullet ranking is better.
Oh, your bullet ranking. What's your bullet ranking?
My bullet ranking is better because where's my bullet? Yeah, my bullet ranking is 900.
Wow. Bullet chess is not real chess.
No, it's not, because it's like it relies.
Just trying to make the most time, like use the most time or least amount of time possible, and make the other person use the most time.
It's a lot of it is because when I got down to the greatest comeback, though. This is the thing.
Ooh.
I got all the way down to 400, and I played my way back up, and I realized that I kept like losing down at the bottom, because the problem was. At a certain point, people would just start running the clock. Like they would just run my clock or whatever, you know? And so I figured out at the lower levels that
they were running your clock. So you decided to clean their clock.
It just like make as many moves as fast as possible, because they can take your queen. It doesn't matter. They're not going to checkmate you, because they can't find it, because they're only ranked 400.
Right.
But once you get up to
they're what? Legally a chimpanzee at that level.
it's like it's a 400 level game. You're not gonna find they're
ripped to all the 400 ranked bullet players out there in our audience.
Sorry guys, but like once I figured out to like play the clock and not the board, I got back up to like 600, and that's when people actually started like playing moves that I recognized. And right. So I could like, and I was like I figured out a couple of checkmate patterns, and then I was like great, easy. And I got back up to 900, because people would blunder pieces, and that's where I thrived.
So you do well when people do poorly.
Yeah, no, yeah, I'm better ranked when people don't have time to think. Yeah. What?
I think it's a little bit. I think it's funny that you say when people blunder pieces, I thrive. It's like going to like soccer matches. Be like, when the goalie doesn't save the goal from being scored, I do really.
Oh no, this is not a brag. This is a self-own. Yeah, I'm owning myself on this podcast. Being like, yeah, when I win when people blunder pieces. I don't win when they don't.
Give me a second. I need to refresh your feed here.
My cash?
Say that one more time.
I could use some refresh in my cash.
My cash.
So you kept saying it a couple weeks ago. You were like, I got to refresh your cash. Hold on.
It's C-A-C-H-E.
Yeah.
Spelled it wrong like three times.
C-A-C-H-E, cash.
C-A-C-H-E, cash.
Yeah, that's how you say it.
Spell it one more time. So the other day we were at my friend's house.
That is how you spell it, right?
It is. Yeah.
I was like, you were gaslighting me.
I was. We were at my friend's house the other day, and it was actually a really great hangout time.
Sure.
I told you this on the bonus podcast, but I don't remember, on patreon.com/crunch. But we were at my friend's house, and we were hanging out, and we were having a couple drinks. I had a Mexican mule, which is like a Moscow mule, but with tequila.
Yeah,
very delicious.
I feel like I hear they call it a burro. A burro. Yeah.
I guess that's so funny to make that. I'll make you a Mexican mule and then hand it to someone and say, here's your ass. I handed their ass to them.
Yes.
So that's a funny joke that I could do later in real life. But but
not all your friends are listening to your podcast now.
Yeah, none of them listen. But I was hanging out. And we separated. The men went outside and the women were inside, I think because the women wanted to talk about something. I don't know what. Still to this day, I've not asked Emma what they talked about, because I'm sure it was nothing important. And so we were all hanging out there, and we heard from the inside, one of the ladies, we later confirmed that this was not true, but what it sounded like she exclaimed was, I knew it! And so... And it was this guy's wife. And so he looks to me and the other guy, Nolan, looks to me and Blake, and he says, is there something you guys haven't told me? And Blake is the most earnest, honest, no guile in this man whatsoever.
Salt type of the earth. Person.
Salt of the earth, pure. Uh-huh. He looks confused. He's like, what? And then I start smiling, and I look at Blake and I look at Nolan, and Nolan's looking at me like, what's going on? Someone pregnant? What's happening? And I look back to Blake. I say, should we tell him? And then Blake's like, what are we telling him? Like, he's freaking out. And Nolan's losing it, because he's like, what's going on? And then I had to break, because I was like, there's nothing. I'm just messing
I don't up. Know anything. But
it's just.
Should we tell him?
It's so funny.
That's so mean to do to someone.
I know, but it was such
good. Should we
tell him? But
should we tell him?
Emma was always mad at me because I generate these scenarios so quickly. And even like when we're home, like we were, it was just me and Emma and Peter and something, he was like coughing or something. And I was like, oh yeah, his glands are being overworked. Because I don't know anything about the boy. I don't know anything about his biology.
I was saying this to Phoebe the other day because I was trying to explain, like, I was listening to this podcast and someone said it's like ours.
Yeah.
And it's somewhat like ours.
Who said this?
It's more tame. It was someone on Twitter said it was like ours. It's tamer. It's not, it's like, it's two dudes goofing. It reminded me more of Terminally Chill than our podcast. If that's a good frame of reference.
Is our podcast not tame? Are we unleashed?
No.
Are we wet and wild?
So I was trying to explain this because I was like, what is missing from their show?
Unleashed podcasting.
Star Wars.
Star Wars.
Do you have any more of those cups or is it just the Star Wars one?
I only have this one.
Because we had like four or five of those growing up.
What, the Tervis mugs?
Sure, something like that. I don't know. Maybe they were selling them. We had like a Florida Gators one.
Yeah.
No, I only have
the Star Wars one. I need to get a K-State one, but you know, I've just grown so comfortable with the Star Wars one. I haven't seen a Star Wars film in years.
It's great because it can keep hot drinks hot and cold drinks cold without heating or cooling your hand. So
much like a lightsaber. Hey. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Crunch. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is a stimulating intellectual conversation, but I wanted to pause the episode real quick to let you hear from some of our sponsors. We will be back right after this.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So this is what I was telling Phoebe. I was like, the thing that is missing from their podcast.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not missing. They probably don't want this. They're much more successful than we are. So nothing is missing.
Gosh darn it.
I know. But the thing that our podcast has is the Ethan effect, which is where you try to say the most ridiculous, borderline obscene thing you can think of in the moment. not obscene. Not bad. But you try to think of this outlandish, you're in your brain, I imagine, like there's a wheel turning that's like, what is the most outlandish thing I could say that will move this conversation to something that no one was expecting? You know what I mean? Like you're a chaotic factor in this podcast.
I really wish that the effect that's named after me isn't something that's helpful to humanity.
And helpful to humanity. It helps humanity have goofs.
That's true.
It's good. Like
the guy who invented the Coriolis effect,
John Coriolis.
John Coriolis. He's known for something good and beneficial. And now everybody's like,
Corey was his middle name.
Yes. Coriolis effect. And they say it very seriously. They don't know what it means. Nobody knows what it means.
Yeah.
You say the Ethan effect, everyone's like, I don't know. It's not my style.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, everybody gets cool things named after them. The Coriolis effect. Lou Gehrig's.
See, you have the Ethan effect too.
I was trying to think of a second thing, but I couldn't. So I just
agreed
for
right.
Lou Gehrig's disease.
Lou Gehrig's disease.
Sorry.
Yeah, I feel bad for that guy back in the 13th century named Henry Bubonic. Just a real tragedy.
Yeah, tragedy that he got that. I think it was actually the rat's name was Bubonic. The rat.
Yeah, he instead of standing on someone's head and helping them cook, he stood on someone's head and they died.
And they died.
They were.
You know what I found out the other day? I found out there's a historical myth about the Black Plague that blames the Catholic Church for the Black Plague. Did you know this?
I'm not surprised.
I'm not surprised about it either. But do you know what it is? I want you to guess. What the myth is.
The myth.
Yeah.
That the Catholic Church started the Black Plague. I would say
is the Catholic Church to blame for the Black Plague?
So they didn't. It's not like they originated it. Like some like monk cooked it up in a lab, like Wuhan. Yeah. I would say that it's probably similar to the accusations that people levy against Mother Teresa, in that it was suffering as a part of the spiritual experience, and so to heal the suffering would be to take away the spirituality of the suffering. And the Catholic Church believes in suffering, and so they did not properly or adequately treat people who were affected by the illness, and therefore it spread much further than it would have otherwise if the Catholic Church had believed in the science. That's my guess.
No.
Dang it.
That is a good guess, but that's just a criticism about the medieval period in general.
They didn't have science.
Like they didn't have MRI machines.
That's part of the
mythos of the medieval times.
The Dark Ages. The only reason they were dark is because at night everyone went to bed.
No, they're dark because we don't know much about them.
Instead of staying up and watching HBO Max.
Mm-hmm.
Like
the Dark Ages are not the medieval period.
I don't know anything.
Did you know that's the difference? I didn't know this until
the dark. When's the Dark Ages?
What, the Dark Ages are the period in between the fall of the Roman Empire to the High Middle Ages.
Okay.
Because we don't have any records of them.
So what the hell are the Middle Ages if it's not? What's the Middle Ages?
The Middle Ages is.
Is that when Frodo was knocking around?
So it's from. It's from 1100 to, or yeah, it's from the 1100s to the rise of modernity in the 1500s is the Middle Ages.
So what's the medieval period?
That same thing. Medieval. And then there's the low Middle Ages, and there's the early Middle Ages, the high Middle Ages, and the low Middle Ages. The high comes first. So then they kind of. Anyway, the myth. The so myth.
Everybody
about
lived
Catholic
on a mountain,
and
then everybody lived at sea level, and then everybody. Yeah.
Everyone moved to the Spanish lowlands. The myth about the Catholic Church and the Black Plague is the Catholic Church, because of witches, was suspicious of cats and killed all the cats.
I have heard this.
The cats didn't eat the mice, and the mice spread the Black Plague.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer the one that blames the Ottoman Turks for bringing the rats over on boats. That's my preference.
I think, is that a myth or is that a truth?
I don't know. It happened like 300,000 years ago. Who cares?
What about, I read a book once about cholera,
mm-hmm.
and it's starting in London, and it's because nobody washed their hands, and like the poop just kind of sat under people's houses and under the streets.
Yeah.
And it got into the water supply. And
I have heard this.
The reason I bring that up is because the other day I took a temperaments test. Mm-hmm. And I was speaking with one of the ladies that works at my company, and I said choleric, and then she said choleric, and I was like, oh frick, like I felt so dumb and so young. I'm the youngest person at this company. I can't afford to have such churlish mistakes as to say choleric instead of choleric.
I think it's choleric.
This woman has been, she's a leader in her industry for the last 34 years. You know,
is
who
she
am
a
I
leader
to say?
In medieval temperaments and bloodletting?
I don't know. Guess my percentages. I'm choleric sanguine.
I feel like you're a point. You're probably like a 0.276, I think. I'm just not, maybe 5% ER. I don't know. I'm guessing your baseball stats.
My slugging percentage.
Yeah.
My OBS. My OBS. Hey.
Your OBS.
On base sliding.
It's on base percentage, right? It's OBP.
OBP. Yeah. OBP. So I'm 59%.
When you find a little oil in the ocean, OBP.
OBP. wake me up, Texaco. All right, we're going to moving on. I am 59% choleric, 41% sanguine. Oh. Do you believe that about me?
I don't know what those words mean.
You don't know about the four temperaments?
No, I don't know about the four temperaments because I feel like it's just you... Myers-Briggs for dead people. Is what I mean.
That's really funny.
Thank you.
That's really good. No, I think you should take the temperaments test.
I think the way you figure out your temperament is just figure out how much
get really blood, mad and see what happens.
Bile, yellow bile, and phlegm or is in
it's
your
not,
system.
It's not at all what you think it is. I'm going to send you in Discord and I want you to take it. It'll be for our business. I need to know what your temperaments are so that we can do better business.
Are you going to make me pay for it?
Better business. No, it's a free test. Betterbusinessbureau.com. It's actually
betterbusinessbureau.com.
No, it's not on the betterbusinessbureau.com. It's
temperament
on
temperament test. Action yes. oriented, idea not, oriented, people oriented, peace oriented.
Don't take it right now.
This but looks like were, DISC.
It's DISC is based on the temperaments.
Is it really? No, this is exactly, this is DISC. This is just DISC.
Yes, but
then I already know what I am.
Okay, then you're being insufferable right now.
What?
I just want you to, I sent you the link so that you would take it later, and then I want to know which ones you are.
You sent me the link and you're mad that I clicked it and looked at it? Is that what's happening right now?
Yeah, I guess I'm the insufferable one.
You only insuffer because you made me suffer first. Just know that if you suffer, I've insuffered first.
Oh man.
If you find me insufferable.
I feel bad when it hurts my feelings. This is not a serious comment. It hurts my feelings when I
thank you for prefacing this.
Yes, when I send you something and it's like this is something that Patrick doesn't know about. I'm going to share it with him and like explain it to him. And you immediately categorize it as something you already know about and refuse to listen to me.
I related to my previous experience.
Or maybe you commandeer the conversation to make it about your own thing.
Ethan, we should talk about this with our therapist.
We should get Father a therapist.
Anthony. We should.
That'd be so funny if at that moment, Father Anthony walked in the door behind me. And all of this was
like that
ruse.
Big Bird meme. He just kicks the throat. No, but have you ever taken a DISC assessment before?
Yeah, I'm high in driver.
What is your you're just a capital D.
I'm high in D, and then I'm high in I, and then I'm very low in S and C.
Well, what I got was like,
it's been a long time since I've taken
ID. So it's like I'm in the I section, but I tend towards the D of the wheel, and I'm very far away from C and S.
Yes,
it's not,
we're the same except for that. Yeah. I'm D. I'm
your primary D.
I'm primarily D.
Yeah.
I'm the sunny D. I've been taking supplements lately. Can I tell you something?
Sure.
I've been supping magnesium.
That's good. I don't simp, I sup.
And one of the effects that it has is
from Jove's nectar sup.
Makes you a bit more regular.
Oh.
Yeah. So that's been good.
That's been good. You don't have to go on your wipe anymore.
I used to go 3-4 days without pooping. And now it's like every 30 minutes.
One time I felt really bad when I did this, but I was like, I think I was just coming out of crunch. And so I was in the like, I was in that Ethan effect mode, right? Like,
Ethan effect. It's an AOE spell that I cast over everyone around me.
I was like in that mood where I was like saying ridiculous things. And I went into the bathroom and I came out like in like 2 minutes. And my wife was like, wow, that was really quick. And I was like, yeah, I got rope burned. It came out so fast.
Yeah.
And she was like, I don't like that. I don't like that you said that. I think one of the hardest was over too.
The hardest thing in marriage is not waking up in the middle of the night to take care of the baby. It's not dividing household chores, setting expectations. It's not money. It's not any of those things. It's transitioning from boy talk to girl talk. Yeah. That's the hardest. So many marriages would be saved if we could figure out how to make this transition more smoothly. Yes.
Boy talk to girl talk. This is true. This is fair.
Yeah.
We need, I've been thinking about this for the book. I'm about to hit chapter 6. I'm 5 chapters
You're
in.
Crushing
I'm halfway
it.
Done with the book, right?
Yeah.
The book's due in August.
Yeah.
I'm so done.
It's how many chapters are there going to be?
11 or so. And that's including the conclusion. What?
What about an epilogue?
So chapter 1 is the introduction and chapter 11 is the conclusion. So they're probably going to be named introduction conclusion.
Are there any appendices? Is there going to be any?
No, because I got mine removed when I was in high school, so it feels disingenuous to put an appendix.
Yeah, you put a gallbladder at the end of the book.
There might be an index. There might be an index at the end.
An index.
And it's a bunch of books you're not allowed to read. But I'm coming up on chapter six.
Yeah.
I just finished like the main part where it's like, here's John Paul II, here's Edith Stein, here's, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm about to enter into like the part of the book that's like stuff that I've been reading and thinking about recently. So I'm trying to approach this with more like discernment, because I don't want to
drive into it and be like, yeah, this is all fresh and new and it's cool, and so I'm going to put it in the book.
Yeah. So like, I don't want to like go too far. But what I've been thinking about is like Ivan Illich wrote this book on gender, where he talks about gendered domains. And so in this point in the book, I just got done talking about how
you're quoting, you know, like, JP2, Edith Stein, and Ivan Illich in this book.
Yeah, man.
Hell yeah, brother. I'm in. I'm buying it.
I've decided
to give you an endorsement for your book.
I started out the chapter with Ivan Illich is my favorite crazy person.
That's true.
He's just so cool.
He is.
But he talks about like gendered spaces and how those things are important for like cultivating a gendered what genders mean for society.
Does he mean like when you're at a mall and you walk by a Justice and then you walk by a Lids, like that? Is that what he means?
Yes, that's exactly what he means. No, that's not what he means.
Oh, okay.
But the main issue in like, so the this part of the book is like, okay, so there's two different genders. But like, it's kind of hard to explain. But like, part of the book is like talking about how the conservative idea of gender is like, men work, women do baby. Women cannot work, men cannot baby. And it's like, no, this is not
one of those.
Yeah, right. It's like these two things are supposed to happen in tandem because God tells mankind to fill the earth and till it, and very clearly Eve is better suited to filling the earth, but Adam has a role, and then Adam is more.
And Eve's a filling. I'm out there a tilling.
But like, they have to help each other because, like, you know, man has a secondary role in filling the earth. All that stuff.
Yes,
you've heard me talk about this before.
Probably.
I was too busy knuckle deep in my own.
Sometimes I just zone out because I'm
like tickling my brain.
If you hit the frontal lobe too hard, then you black out for a second. So. Anytime I'm not paying attention on the podcast, that's the reason.
That's why. but this part of the book is like, okay, so, you know, there are differences between men and women. So like, how do we build a world where, you know, given that there are gender differences, but the way that they're existing now is like very unequal, where it's like women don't have access to spaces that are dominated by men. And it seems to be like men get all the good ones, you know. It's like, okay, we've split up, you know. Like, I mean, you see, like, okay, medicine, right? I talked about this earlier in the book, how like in the Industrial Revolution split women and men, the work inside the home from the work outside the home, and the way that masculinity was defined is men do the work that makes other people money, women do the work that doesn't make other people money, and this is like transitioned into corporate America, where men are doctors and in sales and lawyers, and women are paralegals and typists and nurses. Like, they're not making money. They're supporting the people that do. Generally. And so like these
can be obviously exceptions,
right? Yes. And this is like, this is a problem. This is the point of the book, is like, this is a problem.
Yeah, this because is not good.
It's not good because it's like, it's a bad way to look at a gendered world. Women should have domains where they have exclusive access to this domain, and it is an exercise of their femininity, and it's a powerful thing, and it's something that men don't have. Like, it's a space that men don't have access to, and men need to have spaces that women don't have access to. And Ivan Illich talks about this. He calls them domains, and he talks about how marriage is the place where those two domains meet. But we're trying to make that happen outside of marriage, where the domains meet outside of marriage.
Yes.
And that doesn't make sense.
No, they need to have work wives, and then they become second wives.
Yeah.
And that's not good or healthy.
So anyway, what I'm saying is, yes, Ivan Illich agrees with you. There needs to be a transition between boy talk and wife talk.
Yeah, I basically know as much as him.
His books are so skinny, so I mean, it's not much.
Yeah, but they really pack a punch.
They really do.
We've been going here for about 35 minutes, approximately, on the podcast.
Sure.
Before we go into our dating segment,
yes,
in probably 10 to 15 minutes,
I want to address... everyone is abreast of the schedule of today's class.
We need to have a gavel so that we can clang it.
Did everyone get the programs that I mailed out?
Every week on thecrunchcast.com, I post the podcast schedule. And if you're not seeing it, that's your own fault.
That's your own darn fault.
I've also updated the website recently, and it looks sick ah right now. So you should go look at it. I updated the branding.
That's good.
Okay. So there's lots of things I want to talk to you about. Some of them are more apt for a business meeting between you and I. I have this idea where you make all of the content for our social media channels.
Yeah.
I have this really cool idea where you do all of the work for me. And then I have this other idea.
Does that include your Twitter account?
No.
Okay, I was going to say.
No. It may say crunch in the handle, but that stuff's proprietary, baby. That's all me. Plus, I don't know if you want Robney Dainberfeld in the crunch lexicon of tweets. But I wanted to talk about other myths surrounding the Catholic Church.
Oh.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Maybe not myths, but there's been a lot swirling lately, and I thought it would be good to talk about it.
Sure.
Not in a terribly serious way, but no, in just like not. This is interesting. So Benedict...
I think we deserved Mexico.
What? Mexico City?
I was. Did you see the new Black Panther movie?
There's new myths that are coming out that I don't even know about. No, I don't know about. I did not see the new Black Panther movie. Is that?
Spoil a character that's in it?
You can spoil anything you want about Black Panda 2. Black.
Kung Fu Panther.
It's the wrong continent. Wrong continent. Namor, Black Panther 2 Wakanda Forever, please spoil the whole plot.
The villain is Namor is the villain.
Namor.
That
soccer player?
Submariner. I don't know who that is.
That's Neymar. That's a different
name. Okay.
Sorry. Namor?
Yeah, Namor the Submariner is the main villain in Black Panther. It's kind
this
of unfair.
Is a guy who's on a submarine?
It's like Aquaman.
He's Aquaman. Okay.
He's Aquaman. Cool. And apparently he was like a really big deal in the 1940s. Like the original comics was like, what if guy underwater? And everyone in the 1940s was like,
scary. Well, that's because there were actual underwater
submarines
threats.
Underwater. Yeah.
Yeah, so that kind of makes sense. Now it all happens in the web, in the internet.
Yeah.
You know, nobody's launching nukes.
How is cyber warfare real? Just turn off your computer.
That's funny. Yeah.
Thanks. I tweeted that once. It didn't do very well, but this is really funny. Come on.
I'm gonna tweet it right now. Yeah.
I don't know how much of his backstory. This is definitely not original to the character because they would not have done this backstory in 1940. But he's an Aztec. So the story was like he's the son of an Aztec woman from the 1500s. And when the conquistadors were coming in, they were slaughtering the Aztecs.
Yes.
Very bad. Very bad. Eh. And the Aztecs were slaughtering their children.
So,
and then I realized why Americans are so pro Aztec.
Yeah.
And I was like, never mind.
Oh yeah,
I
that
understand.
Makes sense. This tracks. This is a through line.
There's a connection here.
Yeah.
But the point was like, it's like we were trying to save ourselves. And so we prayed to our God and he gave us this herb that helped us breathe underwater. And then I was born. And like, that's,
yeah, I got to get some of that weed.
I know, but they're trying to do like a similar Black Panther thing where it's like a commentary on imperialism and the effects of imperialism and how, the Aztec people and the Wakandan people should be allies because they're both fighting against the big imperial. They're fighting each other instead. And this is bad. Why are they fighting each other?
Yes.
This is the commentary. I'm fine with social commentary. I don't care. But anyway, this is the original myth about the Catholic Church. It's called the Black Legend. Have you heard of this?
A lot of black situations with the Catholic Church these days.
Indeed. The Black Plague, the Black Panda, the Black
Panda. Dude, I'm but never gonna live that down.
The Black Legend, and there's the corresponding White Legend. And this is, you haven't heard of this?
I feel like I'm in the first 5 minutes of a kung fu film right now.
That's fair. This is very like
I'm just getting a bunch of exposition. Okay, tell me about
the Black Legend is the, you know, the Spanish government was, the Spanish Empire was awful and it killed all the natives and it was very evil and all this stuff.
Sir Francis Drake.
Yeah, and it was spread by the Protestant English because Spanish is a Catholic country. And then there's the corresponding White Legend where it's like, actually, the conquistadors were awesome and they didn't do anything wrong. And burning the ships was actually really cool. And they were really nice to the Aztecs. The Aztecs were mean. They were big old meanies and all this stuff. So it's the White Legend and the Black Legend. The reality is likely...
gray.
Yeah. It's like, the pagans... are probably going to be bad guys, and the military leader who's trying to find gold is probably not, doesn't have the best intentions. And the priest that came along with him might have been a little motivated by the gold thing, or he might have been desperately trying to stop, you know, bloodshed, right? There's all that stuff. So that's like the original anti-Catholic myth in the West.
Wow.
Yeah, is that the Protestant English were like, wow, they're really mean to the natives. Ironic, right?
Yeah, right. That's interesting.
Oh, and they mixed up the small... They brought up smallpox in the movie, too. They were like, the conquistadors brought smallpox. And they like heavily implied that they did the smallpox blanket thing. And
Thomas
I was like, no. You're not pinning us on... You're not pinning that on us.
No.
I'm not Spanish, but I'm Catholic. That you're not pinning that on the Catholics.
That was the deist founding fathers.
Yeah, that was the Quakers. All right? The Quakers. The friends.
Yeah.
They were the ones who did... I don't know if they did that. I don't know who did that.
So I don't know about any of that, but what I was reading about this week. So Benedict dies.
Yeah,
and
man.
People lied. And that's what I'm saying. So a lot of there's a lot of stuff out there. I've been reading a lot of stuff.
A lot of the Hitler stuff, the Hitler Youth stuff about Benedict?
No. That's fine.
Oh, okay.
Everybody was drafted into Hitler Youth if you were of a certain age at that time in Germany. So it doesn't
men of a certain age.
Of a certain quality.
A certain age is 14.
Yes. So I don't care about that. I think it's the book that he published posthumously. And it was in Italian and everybody was like, oh, it's this, I speak Italian and this is what it says. And apparently, allegedly, in theory, there's he kind of names like the sort of sex stuff that everyone kind of sorry, did you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Have you seen any of this? I think he talks about how there's like a culture of rampant sexuality in like certain seminaries and that type of thing. He doesn't specifically name the Lavender Mafia or anything like that, which is an allegedly existing group of people in the Roman Curia that are all sympathetic to the LGBTQ plight.
Because they are, in fact, because themselves boinking. Yeah.
Because they are gay. And so he didn't name them, but he kind of talked about how it's like a big problem and all these things. So everyone's like, oh, this is because he knew all this stuff. He's like pressured to step down and because this and this. And everybody's like throwing things around about like why Benedict was asked to step down is because he was pressured by. Then it went one step deeper because I started doing some more reading. I started doing some more digging. You go.
Yeah,
a little bit
I think
deeper.
The guy who stood up to the Nazis was pressured by the gays to leave the papacy. Hitler couldn't get him, but no, Milo Yiannopoulos, he had a or whoever, I don't know who the first gay guy I thought of.
Oh man, that's really funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, Hitler couldn't get
him. I don't think you can pressure anybody who was an Orthodox Catholic in Europe in the 20th century to do anything.
Yeah, there were a bunch of really tidy cardinals that scared him out of the Vatican.
Yeah.
It's like, oh no. So I did some more digging and
ostensibly the most powerful man in the world.
I think the Lavender Mafia thing is easy to focus on because it's like scandalous. The Lavender Mafia, whatever. It's easy to point fingers at like a group of allegedly gay cardinals and be like, look at this. You know, like it's easy to point at and go look at that. And that's why Benedict resigned. But there's people that say that he was pressured by American intelligence that is covertly in place inside the Vatican. And I was like, okay, that's a bit more interesting. You know,
that is more interesting. That's a subject of a book.
I know, that's a subject of a book. And so I read the book. We don't have time to get through the whole thing, but
you read the book.
I didn't read the whole thing. I read the first couple chapters, but I've got a lot going on. All right. I only have it on my phone as a PDF. It's hard to see at night.
That was the newest episode of The Last of Us.
It was great. It was great. Okay. Yeah. There was also, speaking of the Lavender Mafia, a couple of gay guys in that one. Yeah, people were saying that
it was like them... The Last of Us are going to be The Last of Us.
Yeah, it's like
they're not procreating at all.
I know, it's just two gay gentlemen who hole up in a, sorry, I'm going to use a different word. Sorry. Two gay gentlemen who oh man, I was not on purpose. Oh gosh. It's two gay gentlemen who find refuge in a small town after everyone mm-hmm. has left, and they survive. Yeah. But the whole time I'm asking, it's like a love story and it's romantic, and they commit suicide together. And it's like, oh gosh, this made me cry.
They Romeo and Steve it.
Yeah, they Romeo
it's
and
Romeo and Juliet, not Romeo, Romeo and Juilliard, and
maybe.
Sure.
Julian, Romeo and Julian. There maybe, it is. Is good. Better.
Rewind that back. Hold on, let me do it again.
Yep.
Oh, they Romeo and more like Romeo and Julian. All
right. Nice.
Thanks.
Yeah, no problem. I'm not going to edit that. It's too much work.
I know.
Da Vinci Resolve is an unwieldy enemy of mine.
It's a demanding mistress.
It's truly, which these guys did not have. But they, it was just interesting that it was like, everyone's like, oh, this is so romantic. And these guys died and because one developed Parkinson's and they survived for 20 years in the middle of this
another guy
apocalypse. and
bubonic.
It's just like, why would you like the whole point of living? Like, I just don't understand the whole point of like surviving, you know, if it's just going to be you, it's you two, you know?
Yeah.
And I understand that if they don't want to procreate, whatever. And I understand the base human need for survival, but it was just, and then the suicide at the end, I was like, oh, this really all was just for you. You know,
yeah,
like you were super reluctant to help anybody else. You didn't help anybody else. You had this whole town that was a safe place. That you had electric fences and all these things, and it was just for you. Yeah. And I don't know, it did not seem very I don't know. I was not impressed with it.
What passes for romance.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was different from the game, because in the game, the one guy just commits suicide because he doesn't want to live anymore, and the other guy is just grumpy and living in this town by himself.
Oh, I see.
Anyway. Beyond this. So I read the first couple chapters of this book. And it starts to put the pieces together. I haven't completely finished it, but it seems like that there is a reason to believe that the NSA or the CIA or whoever has its fingies in the Vatican. And the reason being, and I think this is very interesting, just an insight into the psyche of the church, mm-hmm. especially at the levels of leadership. So coming out of World War II, obviously Rome, Italy, Mussolini, Axis powers, tough time to be Catholic, tough time to be living in Rome, tough time to be living in the Vatican City State. You kind of have to like survive and make alliances where you can and not get the Vatican totally sacked and taken over, because who knew what was going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the war ends, the Nazis are defeated, but the big thing is the communists. Everybody's now scared of the communists because America, other side of the ocean, Russia, right over here.
Yep.
And in terms of like the communist versus Nazi thing that comes up a lot, the Nazis were not as explicitly like atheistic as the communists were. And so at the time, because nobody really knew the full extent of like the whole concentration camps and all that stuff right away, there was a lot of welcomeness and like openness to working with former Nazis to fight against communists, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of former Nazis were recruited and then hired by the CIA essentially to be like to be the stay back forces.
Isn't that what Paperclip was? Operation Paperclip?
I think it's something like that. Paperclip might have been a different thing, but it was they like stayed back to like fight the communists from taking over Western Europe, basically. Mm-hmm. So the problem is that's like an act of war
And like, if you're Congress, like you have to like declare war on someone in order to like fund a war. But the CIA was like, we have to do this in order to like prevent the spread of communism, which is the biggest threat to American hegemony after America comes out on top after World War II. So what do? We should start a secret government organization that it can fund anything it wants whenever. So this is how the CIA is founded, basically. So they start this and they're doing these things and they need money. They need money to fund the operation. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, what are the ways that we've seen governments raise money for military operations? And this one guy was like, oh yeah, when I was in China, they sold heroin. And so American government's like, that seems pretty lucrative.
Yeah.
We could probably do that. And so they start getting heroin from Italian pharmaceutical companies. They use their connections from the American mobsters. So like Italian American mobsters, they ship them back over to Sicily. They're like, hey, lean on all these pharmaceutical companies and like, you're going to be our go-between to get heroin to the United States. They also start up an operation in Burma and all these things. And they start shipping
Bangalore.
We're not going to get into that. We don't know where Bangalore is. We don't know where it is.
We don't know where the heroin's coming from.
Where are the drugs going?
But they start shipping it to none other than Harlem in New York. And they get just a bunch of black people addicted to heroin, basically. And the CIA is like fine with it because who's going to notice? Who's going to care? You know, totally gross and awful. But they start making a ton of money from selling heroin. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's crazy the statistics where like,
was this during the war on drugs?
The war on drugs didn't start until the 80s or something, right? I don't know.
Yeah, sure. I just didn't know how far in the future this was.
I think this is why the war on drugs had to start. It's because the like number of heroin addicts before this operation started was like less than 10,000. And then a couple years after it, it was over 100,000 in the United States. Like just a ton of people got addicted to heroin. And so opiates, and they had to like convince the mobsters like, hey, we really need you to do this. And the mobsters were like, we don't really deal in opiates. And the CIA was like, yeah you do. And so so they do this, and the problem is like, okay, we've got this dirty money, we need a place for it to go in and come out clean, but this is hundreds of millions of dollars. I don't know if you know, but in Italy, in Rome, in the Vatican, there's this little place called the Institute for the Works of Religion, or religious works, however it's translated. Yeah. The IOR, commonly known as the Vatican Bank, it's actually a Vatican bank, but it's a totally independent, single state, no oversight by any organization other than the Vatican itself.
Yeah.
And so what you do is the CIA.
It's the treasury of a sovereign power. Yeah.
The treasury is a sovereign power, so you can do anything.
That accepts donations.
Exactly. And it doesn't have to publish any reports about what it does at all. And so CIA goes to Pope Pius XII. Pope Pius XII, reasonably concerned about the influx of communism, you know, coming into Italy. So he's like, whatever I can do to help. And then now all of a sudden the CIA and the Vatican are working together to sell heroin to black Americans to fund overseas secret service operations, basically.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So it's like, it's not good. And I haven't gotten further in the book. I'm sure it, like, as it goes on, it details all of the things that happen.
This is in Pope Benedict's book.
This is in a different book that I read.
I was going to say, so Pope Benedict's like blowing the lid off the whole thing. He's like, hey, so when I became Pope, they said, hey, there's a secret book of all the Pope's diaries in the Vatican Bank. Yeah. Nicolas Cage needs your help to get it so that he can steal the Magna Carta or something.
But I think it's interesting, and I'm not saying this is like, oh, the Catholic Church is so corrupt. It's like, well, yeah, that's not good. They shouldn't have done that. But it's more so, I think, to give an insight into how heads of state dealt with one another in the post-World War II era. I think throughout all of World War I and World War II, and even before then, kind of in the rise of modernity, even like the Napoleonic age and all of these things, the Vatican went from being like having the papal states and like the Holy Roman Empire and all of these things to kind of being just a nitty bitty little tiny city state. And it was just in the throes of all of this war and all these crazy technological advancements over the last 150 years. And so obviously there's like a lot of fear and stress about
what's like in this new world that's emerging after like the chaos of the last 100 years.
Yeah.
With all the technology and all the war and everything, like what's this going to look like? And I think there were so many decisions that were made out of fear that like then set up the Vatican to be in this position where now there's potentially, not confirmed, potentially the CIA is the reason that Pope Benedict resigned, because they wanted to install Pope Francis because he's friendly to certain causes in South America that maybe other popes would not have been friendly to, that the United States needed to, what, blah, 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 blah. I haven't read the rest of the book. I assume that's where it's going.
Sure. Okay.
Probably something with oil and money and drugs. Probably. And so it just is interesting to read about this because it's like, I've read it and now it's like, okay, yeah, I believe that happened, but I don't really like care, you know?
Yeah.
Like I do care. It's bad, but I think it's important for Catholics to know stuff about the church like that, so that when some yahoo online or in person is like, well, did you know about this? And you can be like, oh yeah, you know, or like, okay. not that you have to know everything, but it's like, oh, I can understand how people in the church would do something like that. Cause I think Catholics are so, we're taught so much that the church is so good and pure and holy that anytime someone brings something up, instead of like dialoguing about the thing, we get all, what would the, like, we freak out because it's like,
or the new, my new favorite thing is just hear something awful the church did and you just go based.
Yeah. Well, that's in some situations that's good to do.
It's perfectly fine. In others, it's like,
we just need to have like a better level head about the whole thing. You know,
I'm starting to just become like, no, yeah, that thing was very bad that you did. And you need to like,
yeah. You know, it has no bearing on like the truth of what the church is. And there's there's all kinds of other stuff about Masonic plots and people that have been, that work with the Francis papacy and all these things that I'm just like, I don't know. I've got some questions about all that. I think that Francis is the real Pope. I think that there's a lot of people with a lot of lapses in judgment and maybe some people who are nefarious, but it doesn't take away from the truth of the, you know, all the things. So I don't know. We got to hold all of it in balance.
Yeah. It's just, the world is a broken and sinful place, and people in the halls of power are going to abuse that power, of course. And it's just going to happen. And unfortunately, this is the reality, because, you know, Jesus said that he wanted the church to be universal and all be a blessing to all the nations. And unfortunately, in order to do that, the church needs to be huge.
Yeah.
It's like, it's not, a good friend of mine was like, you know, the real problem with the church didn't start at the Reformation. It didn't start in the Renaissance. It started way back with Constantine when the church allied with Rome and became a political power. I was like, yeah, that's true. A lot of the problems started then. It was pure when it was just being persecuted, but like, that's just not the trajectory of the universal church.
Yeah.
It's going to be an international powerful institution. It always is going to be like it's just, and because of that, people are going to try and get close. And it's not even like it's not the guy at the top. It's not like the figurehead. No. He's not a dupe. He's not a puppet, but he's just, power does not work constitutionally. It's not about who has the powers in the constitution that makes the decisions. It's the guy in the back room who's like been there forever and like knows everybody.
Powers where, you know, agency can be turned into activity. You know, like that's where power is. It's like, it doesn't matter what it says.
We say the CIA approached Pope Pius the 12th. Did they approach him? I don't know. Maybe.
Was there a guy working for the American government that got in contact with someone who talked to the Secretary of State, who talked to the Pope and said, hey, this is something that we can do? And the Pope was like, sounds good to me. And the Secretary of State went back to the guy and then with the other guy. It's possible that like at every level, there was something shrouded from the person that's next in the level about what was going on.
If there's no oversight of this, if you're like the second in command in the Vatican and the only guy who is going to check your bank records or can do anything about it is the Pope.
Yeah.
You're probably fine.
And he's
scared. You can probably do whatever you want.
He's scared witless about the incoming invasion of the communists. And he spends all of his time praying. It's like, he's probably not checking the bank records. So
he probably in fact delegated that to you. So you got
if I was Pope, I wouldn't do anything with the bank.
Are you kidding me? That's like the least of my worries.
Yeah. I would first and foremost institute a papal podcast. just to make everybody have, and it'd be like airport interviews part two, mm-hmm. and it would be even worse. I would actually make it so that we could have a co-papacy, and it'd be you and me, and we're co-papal, and we're up there on the balcony.
Yeah.
Wednesday audience, just doing a podcast.
It's you and me, baby.
What do you think? Tell me what you think about that. No.
I think that it's very biblical to have the guy holding the money bag be a skis ball, you know? That's who you're supposed to. Supposed to pick the shiftiest dude and give him all the money.
We should hire a shifty man.
This is make friends with dishonest wealth. And if you can't, just get a bunch of wealth and give it to a dishonest man. That's what the Bible says.
Yes. So if you're needing to give your money to someone, my Venmo is Ethan.com.
Big us. We're very dishonest. We've been lying to you this whole time. No. I'm actually Ethan. And
not very wealthy. Yeah. Our voices are exactly what you thought.
Yep.
Speaking of dishonest wealth, let's get into Dr. Ethan's dating corner.
Asking someone out the second time you meet or newlywed needs advice on being a good husband.
Ooh.
Just in time for Valentine's Day, I think. No, it's not.
I'm gonna hit you with the Anton ego. Surprise me.
Okay. This question from Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner. This Dr. Ethan's Dating Corner question comes from Sandweeney. The week before Christmas and all through the house, I met a girl who I wanted to meet.
And she was a mouse.
And she was a mouse. Ooh, weird.
Yeah. Started the plague.
Ha ha. That was my Mickey Mouse impression.
I can do a good Mickey Mouse impression. Ready?
Yep.
What was that?
That's my Barack Obama impression.
Let me be clear. Yeah. I am not a mouse.
I am not a mouse.
I do live
not,
in a house.
Would not in a train. I would not, could not, with a plane. The week before Christmas, I met a girl who I'd wanted to meet for a while based on the recommendation of a friend. We small talked for 5 minutes, very normal. I would like to ask her on a date, and I think there's a good chance I may see her at Mass this week. But after that, due to work schedules, no idea when that next in-person meeting would be. Oh. If I can talk to her again this week, I'm thinking about asking her if she'd be interested in coffee or drink at the end of the small talk. Alternative is trying to get a mutual friend to set us up. Ladies, thoughts on getting asked on a date the second time you meet a guy? Any bonus points or penalty points for being after Mass? Sandweeney, what do you think, Ethan? What should Dan do?
Sandweeney. I think that it's not weird to ask someone out the first time you meet them.
Yeah.
I think you should have pulled the trigger right then and there. Why did he wait? What was the holdup? Let's get
You're fine to ask her out as long as she's not filming herself in a gymnasium. You should be fine. If she's filming in a gym, you should not approach because you will end up on TikTok.
Yeah, I also don't think you want to date the films myself working out so that I can make TikToks about men looking at me type of girl anyway.
That's fair.
There are some of those that are legitimate and weird and creepy, but there are some of them that's like the dude just like, I mean, I look around at the people around me often. Like when there's movement, my eyes naturally go over there, you know? Mm-hmm. And so like she moves and then she zooms in on the guy looking at her. It's like, well, you moved. We're biological creatures.
I like the ones where a guy goes up to a girl and is like, hey, you done using that machine? And she's like, oh yeah, it's fine. And then she like goes to her phone. She's like, what a creep.
I can't believe that you would do this.
I don't even think they're real. I think they're pretending. I think it's so many layers of irony that I think the guy is a paid actor and it's actually his TikTok account.
Yeah.
And me watching the TikTok is actually the TikTok and I'm doing it for content so that I can make money on the internet.
Yeah. There's a lot of videos out there that people are responding to as if they're real. And it's just like, you got to look through it. Like there's one on there that was this girl showing a picture of Dwayne, the Rock Johnson's body. And she asked these two girls, like, what would you rate this body on a scale of 1 to 10? One girl said 0. One girl said 4. And so I was like, first of all, no, that's not what it is.
Wrong.
And then they showed him his head. And they're like, what would you rate him? And another girl said 0. And then the other girl said 4. And she was like, do you know who this is? And the girl looks at the other girl. She says, Andrew Tate. And I'm like, that's too funny.
That's really funny.
To like be real. You know, like that has to be. Those are either actors or she edited it to make it look like what it was or was not. But people are responding, like, I can't believe they would say that about Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Like, how do you not recognize him? One time I was in Tokyo, and the only person that they recognized from my t-shirt that had all of my favorite characters on it was Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Everybody loves Dwayne The Rock Johnson. I was like, this is fake.
This is unreal. This is not real.
Semi-related. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was thinking that actually the best thing to do is to go the opposite direction and assume everything is real on the internet. You'll have so much more fun. Ooh. You'll have so much more fun. As long as you don't get mad at things. If you get mad at things, always pretend they're fake. Don't get mad at things. Pretend everything is real. Go, ha, that's so funny that they don't know who Dwayne The Rock Johnson is. That's hilarious. And you move on.
To this guy, Sandweenie. I think you should ask her out as soon as possible, because the market's hot and you don't know when.
Yeah, interest rates are never going to be lower.
That's the time. And so if you can get her phone number from your friend, I would just get it and then call her and say, hey, I just really think you're cute and I really enjoyed talking to you the other day and I would love to take you out on a date. What day works best for you? And then take her out instead of like this way that you have the right idea of asking her out, but you got to take it a step further and you got to pursue this woman. This is what Jason Everett was talking about when he says pursue the woman. It's like, track her down, find her house, get in her car, wait in the back seat. It'll be like a scene out of the new Batman film.
You have no idea how many guys after the Jason Everett talk about pursuing women asked out that girl in their youth group.
Yeah. Which probably good.
It's probably good, but it's so many guys.
It's just hard though, because every youth group only had like one girl, you know?
Ours had so many.
My youth group was a lot of young men.
Really?
Yeah.
Usually Catholic things like that are like 66% women. Like they skew women. Two thirds on the dot. That's kind of like the maxim is like get the guys, the girls will show up.
I just mean more so that there was one girl that everybody wanted to ask out.
Oh, sure. Yeah. That was true in my elementary school. When I was in sixth grade, there was one girl that everyone wanted to ask out. I don't want to say her name.
Just say first name. Give me a first name.
Sure. Okay. So her name is Rita McCall. No, I'm just kidding. That's not it at all.
Riley Sharapa. Oh, no. No, no, no.
I did not go to elementary school with Riley Sharapa.
That would have been crazy.
That would have been awesome.
Can you imagine?
No.
I
don't know what she was like when she was younger.
I yearn deeply for the day that I have either business relationship or find out that someone's in the Discord or something that I went to elementary school with. Obviously, I went to elementary school with Andrew Jordan, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that is really cool.
But
Andrew Jordan is the reason why you have that USB mic that's sitting in. That's why we got USB mics.
Because Andrew of Jordan. Andrew Business Jordan.
Yes, and that I will never forget that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. But okay, so this is a famous L that turned into a W.
Okay.
When I was in sixth grade, I liked this girl and I was like, man, she doesn't like me back. And then I just moved on, right? Went to middle school, grew my hair way too long.
Yeah.
Crashed a golf cart or something. I don't know. Did a little heroin, you know, like everyone, average middle school experience.
Yeah. When you were in Harlem.
Yeah.
In 1947.
And I probably shouldn't make that joke. I went to never mind. but like a couple of months ago, Nick was hanging out with this girl. My little brother was hanging out with this girl that I liked in elementary
school.
The girl from elementary
school. The one that everyone wanted to ask out. Nick was hanging out with her?
Yeah.
That dog, bro. He's got the dog in.
He does. And they were talking.
Oh.
And not that kind of talking. Oh. He was like giving her a ride home, right?
Oh.
And
what?
Okay. And they were like talking about me. Like I came up and Nick goes, oh yeah. Like this is crazy. He's like, you know, he's like doing a podcast now. He's got like a baby. He's married. You know, he listed in that order. Cause those are the most important things. Uh-huh. Podcast, child, married. And then Nicole goes, that's crazy. I had a huge crush on him in elementary school.
It's over. Still funny, guy's right? Name Patrick. Yeah.
I know. But I was like, yeah, cool. That was an L turned into a W. And my, and she, oh no, no, this is what it was. She said, he rejected me. Which is like, I was like, no, no, that didn't happen, but I'll take it.
I'll take it. Yeah.
I'll take that.
I think that's got to be cope from her because she liked you so hard. And the only way that she could make it happen in her mind was that you rejected her. So she created a fiction that she
What's likely that this is a secondhand conversation. So if it did happen and if she's remembering it correctly, what probably happened was she did something that was like a signal and I did something stupid because I'm Patrick that like, that telegraphed that I didn't like her, which is super likely.
She kissed me on the mouth and then I proceeded to vomit into her mouth. And for some reason, she thought I was rejecting her. But in reality,
yeah, that was weird.
I just wanted to bond with her in a way. I saw something on Twitter today.
I saw a little baby bird receiving food from its mother and I thought, how romantic.
I thought, how romantic. But someone said that this guy said one time this girl that I was with really wanted to take me up to a like a high place, like a mountaintop or a rooftop or something. Like she had access to the stairwell,
Golden Gate Bridge or something.
She had access to the stairwell of like this place that you could only get to, and she had access to it. She like wanted to take him, and he said no, because he knew that if he went with this girl to this high up place, that they would have a connection that he would then have to sever. And which I think is very interesting, like the connection between going to a high place and like looking out at the land below you and like the people you're with during that, you kind of form some type of weird bond.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. It's like, I think this is just an interesting.
Why was forming this bond bad? Does he?
I don't think he liked her. I don't think he wanted to date her. And I think this is an interesting sociological study that you can do at home. It's like track, you know, guys and girls who climb onto roofs of buildings together and see how many of them end up dating. You know, I think there's a correlation there. I think there is something.
I did one time in college go to Pittsburgh with a girl and went to the top of this like Cathedral of Learning thing that's in Pittsburgh. It's like this really, it's a really,
that sounds cool like a Church of Scientology building.
Yeah, it does sound like that, but it's on the Pitt campus. And we went up to the top as far as you can go, like just public access. We definitely did sneak. So, and we got up there and graffitied on the wall was, this is a great makeout spot. And I was like, oh, I'm doing something wrong. I was like, I shouldn't be here. I was like, this is not
good.
We read that, and all of a sudden, the vibe changed. It was like, oh, this is weird. We gotta go.
This is weird. Someone kiss me right now. Someone has to kiss me.
I'll kiss the wall if I have.
It's like, what a crazy thing to like name the activity you do in that room on the wall of the room.
It was weird.
Like you're in the dining room. Like, this is a great place to eat.
It also kind of wasn't, because it was like looking over the back way of Pittsburgh. So like, if you're in Oakland, to the west of you is like the really pretty bridges and the river and the mountain and like the hills and all that.
Yeah.
And then to the back of you is like just like suburban, urban, you know, not great
trash.
And that, that's town. What it was looking, and like an old river, like with barges and stuff. Like that's what it looked like that way. And so it was like, this really isn't that. I think it's just that because you're in college and you're living in a dorm. I think that's what it is. It's like, you know, this is the only place that you've found privacy.
you know how I'm feeling when a barge goes by, you know what I'm saying?
You know?
I love when that tugboat hit. You know what I'm saying?
It really gets me. It really gets the
it's the brown note. All right. I think that's it for our podcast today.
Yeah, brown note, Mexico so fast.
Yeah.
Rope burn.
We've done a lot of good here, I think.
Yeah, we've changed the landscape of podcasting
for good.
Say that much, yeah. Honestly, it's over.
You can, if you like the community that we have built through this podcast,
you can join it.
You can go to bit.ly/CrunchDiscord. The link is in the description. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, the Crunch Catholic Podcast on YouTube. If you're watching on YouTube, leave a comment below. Oh. Smash that bell button.
Hit it. And
subscribe. Come on. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Put in the comments below what controversy you think I should do.
Put in the comments
below. And the most liked one, I'll do it.
Put in the comments below the number of times that you've made out on a barge. the question that you answer indicates which host you like the best.
The amount of likes this video gets is how many times our listeners of the Crunch Catholic Podcast have made out on a barge. So hit that like button.
Yeah, like the video, if you want to force Ben Eastman to go on a barge and kiss his wife.
Very sweetly and tenderly. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Not in a weird, creepy.
No, way. Not weird. Like
we're not motivating anyone to do skeevy activities. I'm not into that. But you're gonna go to bit.ly/crunchdiscord. You're gonna go to the Crunch Catholic Podcast. You're gonna subscribe. If you want to support us, this is the last thing I'll say. Patreon.com/thecrunch. At the $10 a month level, you get an extra hour of this every week.
Every week, baby.
And you don't want to miss. And we need your support.
Because that's where we get a little unhinged. That's where we talk about things that we
don't talk
about.
You think I'm unhinged now? The bonus podcast is called The Ethan Effect. And it's just...
it's just me saying, can somebody please hear my confession? Or something, I don't know.
Yeah, we're doing swears. It's going to be awesome. So check it out.
We say butt.
We
say ass, but we're not talking about Mexican mules.
We have almost a day's worth of bonus content. So,
is that true?
Yeah, we have 21 bonus episodes. So yeah, keep it coming. Patrick, do you have anything else for the people?
If anyone would like to name a disease after me, make sure that it is one that gives you... drop dead gorgeous good looks, because that's the only one that would make sense.
Thank you all for listening. Please pray for us. We'll be praying for you, and we'll see you all next week.
Double. Two knuckles deep, baby.